So we are on page 23 of your book, and we have been talking about the Jewish lifestyle and customs. 23, and let's see, there were quite a few people who weren't here last week, right? Who wasn't here last week? Leah, Lisa, just you two? Everybody else was here last week? Yeah? Okay. Well, let me just quickly review for you two. We're talking about the holidays, and we learned that the holidays in the Bible are called the Moadim, and it doesn't really mean holiday Moadim. It means appointed times. It's got times that God appointed, and the first most important appointed time is the Shabbat, which happens every week. So we were looking at some of the scriptures that you can go back and look at. They're listed in your workbook there about the Shabbat, and we learned that Shabbat was given to us by the Lord to be a day of rest, and also as a sign of the covenant, a sign of the covenant that he made with Moses. And we talked a little bit about how that has been very real, because wherever Jewish people lived, they were visible because they would keep the Shabbat. So in whatever city there was a Jewish community, you always knew where it was, and because people were out walking on Shabbat and the stores were closed. And we also learned that it was to be a day when we were to make it holy to the Lord. That was the whole point, was it was supposed to be dedicated to the Lord. So it was to be a day when we were to spend time worshiping God, studying the Bible, praying the things that draw us close to the Lord. And we also learned that it was a commemoration. It's a commemoration of creation, because the Lord made the creation in 6 days and then he rested on the seventh day. And it's also a commemoration, so there's just so much to it, of the Exodus. Because when the people were in slavery in Egypt, they were worked all week. They worked like without a day off. And then one of the first things God did is when he brought them out of slavery, he said, you're going to have a day of rest. And so free people have a day of rest, but when they were in slavery, they didn't have a day of rest. And then we began to talk a little bit about some of the little more details of the things we're to do and not to do. And we talked about the prohibition against kindling a fire, which is because back when the Bible was written, to kindle a fire was work, because there weren't matches, there weren't lighters, there wasn't any way to light a fire except rubbing things together, which was a lot of work. So instead, people kept the fire lit through the Sabbath. And this, of course, has led to a very, very well-known custom in the Jewish community, which is that just before the Sabbath, candles are lit. It's always just before the sun goes down in the beginning of the Sabbath, so that you're not lighting a fire on the Sabbath, but you have a fire lit so you can light other things from it, so that then you have that the fire lit. And we also mentioned that the Sabbath begins according to the way of reckoning the days, which is the Jewish way of reckoning, which is that the day starts at sundown. And that comes directly from the scriptures in the creation account. It says it over and over again. Then there was evening, and then there was morning the first day. And there was evening, and there was morning the second day. So in the creation account, it always starts the day with evening. So the Jewish people have always started the day with the sundown. And that's how it starts in Israel today. What happens now is that the people start preparing for the Shabbat a couple of hours before the sundown, so that they're home and they got all their work done, they got the house clean, they got dinner ready, so that when the sun actually sets, they're ready to enter into the rest. And that's how it's kept in the Jewish culture. And interestingly, I don't know if any of you saw it, but in the Israeli newspapers this yesterday, I think it was, there was a bill going to be proposed in the Knesset, in the parliament, that would change the work week from starting on Sunday to starting on Monday. Because in Israel right now, it's a 6-day work week. And as I was reading it, there was some very interesting things about the Shabbat that came out about it. That cycle was imposed upon the nation by the religious Jewish people. And of course, 80% of the nation is not religious. So they the reason that it impacts them is that there's laws against stores being open on Shabbat.
Oh, yeah.
So you work 6 days, Sunday through Friday, and then on Shabbat all the stores are closed and you're off. So you can't do any shopping. So this is a big point of contention between the religious people and the secular people in Israel, because, you know, when can you do any shopping? So what I didn't know, but what has happened is that you've all heard of kibbutz. You know what a kibbutz is? It's like a communal farm originally. But there are many towns in Israel that are kibbutz. And that means that they're like the government of that town is communal. They all get together and govern themselves. And oftentimes, if they're a farm, they actually produce together and then they split the profits of that. Or they may not be a farm. They may be a factory. A lot of them have evolved into making something. So, you know, like they would make wine, or they would make something from the what they produced on the land, or they could just be making, you know, shoes, something. But evidently, in the laws of Israel, they are exempt from the stuff about not having anything open on Saturday. So years ago, what happened was that the people in the kibbutz got this idea: let's create shopping centers on the kibbutz. And I had no idea that this was what happened, but they have shopping centers on the kibbutz that are open on Saturday. So now the shopping centers are thronged with people on Saturday because it's their only day off. So now the Orthodox are actually proposing that they change the laws to make Sunday not a work day, which would enable the people to have a shopping day so they wouldn't have to shop on Shabbat. And I thought, well, that's a great idea. That's sort of how it is here, right? I mean, if you haven't experienced that, if you're becoming, you know, involved in the Messianic movement, people often struggle with the fact, oh, when am I going to do my laundry? When am I going to do my shopping? It's like, well, Sunday. But then you try to do it and you find that a lot of things are closed on Sunday. But not that much. A lot of things don't open till noon, and you know, but you can do your stuff on Sunday. But that's what I, you know, when I switched from being part of this culture, which is, you know, Saturday is the day to get your personal stuff done, Sunday is the day to go to church. When I became part of the Messianic movement, we switched it. So found that there were stores you could go to on Sunday. They just didn't necessarily open as early, but you could do those things on Sunday. So that's what Israel is doing. And I don't know if it'll pass, but they will also take the work week, they said, and they'll increase an hour a day for the days they work. So they work in 5 days almost as much as they would work in 6 days to make up for the productivity loss, and they'll have Sunday off. So I thought that was very relevant to what we're talking about here, where, you know, the people there obviously struggle with, I got to work all day, and now when can I do my shopping? You know, when can I go do the laundry? Well, I got to do it at night. But now they'll have this day.
So are they still going to shut down the stores on Friday afternoon?
Yeah, three? Yeah. So that wouldn't change. It would still be Shabbat, but then everything
but then
will be open.
Just add Sunday to it, so they'll be closed.
Well, things are open now on Sunday, but people are working.
Got it.
So the only downside, of course, is like it is here: the people in the stores have to work.
Right,
so that's always an issue for retail workers, is that everybody...
What about the immigration? Always been the Orthodox that have control with immigration of Jewish people into the...
Yes, and there will be... That's a big issue, and as Prime Minister Netanyahu forms a coalition, there will be the question of whether the religious parties are part of his coalition. If they are, they will maintain control of immigration. And it's not just immigration, it's also marriage. You cannot get married in Israel unless you are Orthodox. So if you are a secular Jewish person and you don't keep Orthodoxy, you have to go out of the country to get married. And then people go to Cyprus, which is the closest friendly country to Israel. And they get married there, and then they come back, and the government recognizes that as a legal marriage.
What about the Cyprus Jewish people who are not?
They have to go to Cyprus.
Oh.
Because you cannot be married by the Orthodox unless you commit yourself to living an Orthodox lifestyle.
Oh.
And the Orthodox, that's the kind of control that they have, which of course the secular people all resent this, So this is why there's this tension. And actually, it's a big issue in this election. The tension in the election was over whether the Orthodox men had to serve in the army. Mm-hmm. And they have been exempt if they were to go to yeshiva, which means to study the Talmud. And they did not have to serve in the army. But now there's pressure coming from many political parties to say that that's not right. You should have to serve in the army like everybody else. And this is a big, big, hot political issue, which will impact what happens in the coalition that the prime minister forms. Because if he doesn't form a coalition with the religious parties, then they will force the Orthodox men to join the army. They'll be drafted, basically. And of course, that's very much against what the Orthodox parties want to have. So all that's going on. So, but the stuff about Shabbat is interesting to see how they were coping with the same question of, well, how do we do our shopping? How do we, and I saw that as a great idea. I don't know how it'll be, how long it'll take to get through the Knesset and to change everything, but they work 6 days in Israel now and just have Shabbat off. Okay, so we're going to start with this question here on page 23, and the passage in Isaiah is where we're going to pick up. So let's see, we started with Albert last time. Let's go this way this time. Kim, do you want to read? If you got a Bible, you can read from.
I can't see.
Do you want to read? Okay, we're going to look at Isaiah 58, verses 13 and 14. Chapter 58, verses 13 and 14. Yeah, you got it.
Huh?
13. That must be an error in the book. Okay. 13 and 14. Yeah, it's a typo in the book. Yeah. Okay, that's good. We'll get next edition. We'll get that caught.
Say it again.
Yep. Go ahead.
Oh, if you turn back your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, and the holy day of the Lord honorable, if you honor it, not going your own ways or seeking your own pleasure or talking idly, then you shall take delight in the Lord, and I will make you ride upon the heights of the earth. I will feed you with the heritage of Jacob, your father, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken.
Okay, good, Kim. Want to try the question? Want to read the question? And
right here, right?
Yep. No. Where are we? We're way up. I think we're on the first page of your handout. Here.
Ah, that's right. Okay, what should our attitude about the Shabbat be? A good attitude.
Very good. Very good. Anybody else see a word in what we read that is about attitude?
Delight.
Yes. And so it's a very special word. We should call the Shabbat a delight. And if we, according to this verse, what's the promise if we delight in the Shabbat and keep it holy unto the Lord? It's in the next verse. Anybody see it?
God will bless you. And
God will bless you.
Like he promised to the Jacob. And
yeah, this.
He will cause you to ride upon the high places of the earth. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, what is that? What does that mean? Any idea? It sounds good. Right? I think it means he will be lifted up above other people. He will be in the high places. And in my translation, verse 14 says, if you do, you will find delight in the Lord.
I have joy.
Joy in the Lord. Okay, that's good. So it's saying that you will find your relationship with God will be good. And really, if you think about this, this is really important to understand whether you're keeping Shabbat on the right day or not. But what it's saying is that if you set aside one day out of seven to spend with the Lord and you delight in it and honor it, then you will have this joyful relationship of delight with God. Everybody see it that way? And I will lift you up above the peoples. You will be riding in these high places. And there's one other thing on there that it promises. You see what that third thing is?
We'll feast on the inheritance.
Yeah, so there's I think this speaks of material blessing also. And this is always how it is with Shabbat. I mean, because, you know, what it's fighting with, the idea of Shabbat, is the idea that we can take one day in seven and give it to the Lord, and we'll still do as well financially, let's say, as we would if we didn't. So in a sense, you know, we all understand that there's a tithe that's a tenth, right? But what about our time? What is a seventh of our time? It's a day, right? So in a sense, Shabbat is like a tithe of your time. It's saying, I'm going to give this whole day to you, Lord. And it's bigger. It's actually bigger than the monetary tithe, because a seventh is bigger than a tenth, if you know your fractions.
Basically,
right?
It means that God values our time more than our offerings.
Yeah, right. But it's a test of faith also. I found it a tremendous test of faith to be able to say, I'm going to not do all these things that I think are... Now, for me, it was a little easy because I work for a company and I had 2 days off. For you guys with your own business, it's obviously harder. But the thing for me was to not do all the stuff around the house that I was supposed to be doing, you know, all the work projects and all the things that I wanted to get done. To take that day and dedicate that to the Lord instead of doing all those things was a real... How am I going to ever get that done, you know? And what I found was that God blessed the work of my hands, and I got more done on Sunday than I would have gotten done if I'd worked both Saturday and Sunday. The other really interesting thing that happened was that just in terms of the timing of the days was that before I started keeping Shabbat on Saturday, I did take Sunday off because that was what, when we were part of the church, that was what the church taught us. But what happened was that I'd work 5 days, so I'd be tired. And then Saturday was my day to work around the house, you know, to do the projects around the house. But I was tired, okay? But then when you switch, you work the 5 days, you're tired, you get to take the day off and spend it with the Lord and rest, and then you're fresh for to do your stuff, your own stuff, you know? So it was like an extra little bonus in there. But again, it is a test of faith, just like tithing is a test of faith. It's like tithing your time, and it has a great reward to it. So let's take a look now at what Yeshua said about the Shabbat, because when you begin to study the subject, it is amazing how much of the Gospels actually have to do with the Shabbat, and how much of especially what he got in trouble about, what people became opposed to him about had to do with the Shabbat. So, Karen, Mark chapter 2 and verse 27.
I'll read that in a little bit. And he said to them, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath.
Okay. So you want to try the question?
What does Yeshua mean by the statement that it's a gift from him, that there's nothing that you can do for the Sabbath? The Sabbath was given
okay.
rest.
The context of him saying this was that he was being criticized because he was not keeping the Sabbath the way the Pharisees had come to keeping the Sabbath, the traditional way of keeping the Sabbath. And their way of keeping the Sabbath had become lots of rules, so that it became like an exercise in following all the rules rather than a delight, rather than a day of rest. And so what he's saying here is that you've made the Sabbath into so many rules that it's as if you were the slave of the Sabbath. Do you see that? Well, you were made for the Sabbath. The Sabbath is the boss, and you're serving it. And he's saying here, that's not the way I, as God, that's not the way I meant it to be. I meant the Sabbath to be made for man. You see the difference? Rather than man to be made to do what the Sabbath is telling you to do. And then Karen read the other part of the verse. We're going to get to that a little later, but that was just so, what's the word for that? In your face? I mean, what he said to the Pharisees there, can you imagine? I am the Lord of the Sabbath. Woo! That basically is saying, I created the Sabbath. So who's he saying he is?
God.
Yeah. It's like that was so much in their face. And we have a Yiddish word for that. Anybody know what it is?
Chutzpah.
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 Yes. And it means boldness. It means nerve. It means you don't care what anybody thinks about you. You're just going to do this. And yeah. So can you imagine saying that to a rabbi today? I am the Lord of the Sabbath. Woo. So then he gives his explanation, and then the next thing we're going to read here, Catherine, if you could read John 7:23. What we've talked about a little bit last week is where we have to make these halakhic judgments. We have to make judgments as to what things take priority over other things. Because we're going to see here that they were criticizing him for healing someone on the Sabbath because they were saying that's work. So we have two laws that are conflicting. One is saying you can't work on the Sabbath. The other is that you shall love your neighbor like yourself. You should do whatever you can do to help your neighbor. So we have these two laws conflicting. And he's in this verse, he's giving us an example of a halakhic judgment that had already been made by the religious authority. So Catherine, go ahead and read it.
If a man on the Sabbath receives circumcision, that the law of Moses should not be broken, are you angry at me because I have made a man every whit whole on the Sabbath day?
Okay, want to try the question there?
Why could a child be circumcised on the Sabbath? Right. I'm not sure I made the connection as to why a child could be.
Well, the circumcision would be work. It would be defined, the person who's doing it, that would be fine. It actually is a job. A moel is the title of the job. Moel, rather. And so when the people realized, somebody realized this, wait a minute, my son was born on Saturday. So eighth day is Saturday. Can I go and get him circumcised? And you go to the moel, and the moel would say, oh, I can't, it's the Sabbath. But then the parent would say, well, wait a minute. If you don't circumcise him today, then we're breaking the law of Moses that says it must be the eighth day. So what we have here is two laws competing with each other. Which is the higher priority? You see that? So what Yeshua is saying is here, you already decided this issue. This already went to the courts. It went all the way to the Supreme Court in Israel. And the Supreme Court said, if a boy is born on Saturday, they can be circumcised on Saturday. So that's a higher law. So the reason that's very important to grasp here is to grasp this concept of the priorities that the laws take, which in Hebrew is a word for it. It's called halakha. And we talked about this last week, and Allison, your friend Alan, actually was giving some great examples of it. As an eye doctor, he would not have office hours on Shabbat, but if there's an emergency, he will go in. And he wouldn't drive on Shabbat, but if it's an emergency, he'll drive into the hospital.
Because life is more important than keeping Sabbath and preserving life. So that's why I asked him about the circumcision thing before this class, because I didn't know it was in here. Because his great-nephew was circumcised down in New Orleans.
Right.
And I said, well, what happens if it's on Shabbat? And he said, again, life is more valuable in the Orthodox Jewish faith than following the law. So law will be broken to save a life. And circumcision is like saving the life of a child, of a baby, because it's actually, and even in hospitals today, they wait till the eighth day for medical reasons.
Right, right.
Which was actually, you know, centuries after after the law was originally put in place
right.
by Moses.
So,
it's healthiest for the baby to have his
He's putting it all in context of saving a life because he's a doctor, I guess, but it's really
right.
more about one law takes precedence over another law. Mm-hmm. So in this case, the commandment to circumcise your child on the eighth day takes precedence over the commandment not to work. Okay? And the commandment to save the life is taking precedent over it. So that's what the halakha concept means, is that the laws have priority. One laws can override. And I think I gave an example last week from our culture that everybody is familiar with, you know, that we all have to stop at a red light. But if you're driving an ambulance, you don't have to stop at a red light because you have priority. It takes saving the life takes priority.
So what's the short? Why could a child be circumcised?
The law of circumcision takes priority over the law of Shabbat.
Which I would question, because if Shabbat is supposed to be held so sacred,
mm-hmm.
why is there a willingness to break Shabbat?
Well, the rabbis, again, this went to the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
This was, you can just imagine the picture. Somebody came up with this idea. Wait a minute, my son needs to be circumcised, and this moel is refusing to do it because it's Shabbat. And so they would go to the rabbi, and the rabbi would say, oh, I don't know, we better convene the court. And actually, in Judaism, in every community, there is something called a Beit Din. Beit means house, Din means judgment. So the house of judgment is the court. And it always consists of three rabbis. And they would have met, and they would have prayed, and they would have debated, and they evidently, before the time of Yeshua, came out with the decision, we believe that circumcision should take priority over Shabbat. And what Yeshua is doing here is he's saying, you've already made some decisions like this, and I'm saying healing is more important than Shabbat. Okay? So He was, you know what I see it as like? It's almost like a lawyer, if you've ever watched a courtroom scene, quoting case law. It goes in and says, Brown versus, the town of Irondequoit said this was the decision back then, and so we take that precedent. So now we have a precedent that will make our decision for us. So that's what Yeshua is doing here. He's acting like an attorney and saying, you're criticizing me for the way I'm interpreting the law, but here's a case where you made a decision already that it should be interpreted this way.
So is he against it, or he was?
He was saying that he was saying that you should heal on the Shabbat, mm-hmm. right? That Shabbat should not prevent you from healing. And they were, as we'll see in a few minutes, that was why they wanted to kill him.
Mm-hmm. Was that
because
account in the Gospels where Yeshua healed on day other than Shabbat?
Yes. Yes, certainly. There were plenty of times he healed. He was healing all the time, and there was no argument.
But there's accounts of him doing Shabbat.
There's accounts on Shabbat because that's when they came against him.
It conflicted with the rabbis and Judaism.
It conflicted with their interpretation mm-hmm. of the law.
Right.
And he was saying, I don't interpret the law that way.
Right.
And this was in their face. You know. And then that's why I say, and then he says, I'm the Lord of the Sabbath. I gave you the Sabbath, you know. So
wow.
you can begin to see why he would have upset them, right?
John? So back then they didn't have this kind of law, like you can heal someone if somebody's dying, you will go and heal. So they didn't have the kind of law.
They probably had not. Based on the way, or maybe they had said, well, if a person was suffering from like an emergency, you could heal them. But
okay.
not like just, you know, the healing that we're going to look at if somebody had a crippled
yeah.
hand, and he healed it, but he was not willing to let that person go any longer with that crippled hand.
Yeah.
But there wasn't any supernatural healing before Yeshua. Was any supernatural healing with the very few accounts?
There was the snake in the desert. People were healed supernaturally.
Yeah.
But you know, one of the things I just learned recently in something I was reading was that by the time of Yeshua, the rabbis and the scribes, the scholars, had come up with a list of things that they understood from Scripture that the Messiah had to do.
Oh.
And he was like checking them off. You know, he had to heal the sick, he had to raise someone from the dead, he had to make a blind person see, he had to make a deaf person hear. All of these things were things that they had already decided. This is you know, they'd studied the Bible. This is what the Bible says about what the Messiah would do. No, they got this from the Bible. These were the things that they decided.
Where do you find the list?
I'd have to go back and look at where. I just was reading something that said they had this list. I didn't see the list.
Isaiah 53 is a good one.
It's a good list, right?
For me, which is like would be more surprising if I will be living there and I would be like monotone. I would be like seeing Jesus doing all this, like, helping people. I would be like happy and be like surprised.
Well, most of the people were.
He came and he's doing this, and
for them,
they're getting upset.
They're leaders because they were jealous.
They were
jealous because the people were flocking to him. And he wasn't following their rules. So, you know, this was the way it was going to be, and of course God knew this. Now, the next verse, we're up to Sharon over there, Luke 13, is another one of these examples of this halakha. So go ahead and read Luke 13, verse 15.
Just that one verse, 15?
Yeah.
Okay. The Lord then answered him and said, "Hypocrite, does not each one of you on the Sabbath loose his ox or his donkey from the stall and lead it away to water it?"
Okay, so the question. Try to answer the question.
What other kind of work is allowed on the Sabbath? So they were tending their animals.
Yeah, to take care of your animals, to take care of your children, to do the things that are necessary for life. Because, you know, to water the animals. I mean, unless they had a stream nearby, that meant getting water out of the well, pouring it into the trough. That was work. So he's citing another legal precedent. It's okay to do that because otherwise your animals would die if they didn't have any water all day, especially there. I mean, we're talking Israel where, you know, maybe it's 90 degrees all day, and you got to give the animals water.
And if you don't milk the cow, it will dry up.
The cow will dry up, right. Right. So there were things that they already had decided you have to do. And again, you can see he's acting like an attorney. He's citing precedent, legal precedent, for his position. So now let's look at another passage about this legal precedence thing. Let's see. Larry, Matthew 12, 1 through 5.
One Shabbat during the time Yeshua was walking through some wheat fields, his Talmudim, his disciples, were hungry, so they began picking heads of grain and eating them. On seeing this, the Perushim.
Yeah, it's Pharisees.
The Pharisees.
That's how you say it in Hebrew.
Said to him, "Look, your disciples are violating Shabbat." But he said to them, "Haven't you ever read what David did when he and those with him were hungry? He entered the house of God and ate the bread of the presence, which was prohibited both to him and his companions. It is permitted only to the Kohanim. Or haven't you read in the Torah that on Shabbat, Kohanim, was that
the priests, right,
profane Shabbat and yet are blameless?"
Okay, so here he's pointing to two things. Number one, that there's a precedent in the Bible for people who are hungry, if they're walking through a field, being able to eat the grain. And that was from the story of David's men. And then he brings up this thing, which is very important to us, actually, about the priests. Well, go ahead. Why don't you answer the question?
How and why do priests desecrate the day? Well, they went into the temple and ate bread.
No. Anybody have any other ideas how they would desecrate the day?
Well, I don't think they were working and doing their things.
You don't think they were? Or you don't think they were, or do you think they were?
I think they were.
They were.
They were working and doing the priesthood.
And what did they have to do on the Sabbath? Anybody know? What did the priests do? What kind of work did they do?
The slaughter thing?
Yeah, there were sacrifices.
Start fires.
The Bible commands there to be sacrifices on the Sabbath, every Sabbath. So they had to slaughter the animals, they had to put wood on the fire, they had to keep the fires going, they had to better take out the ashes. All those things were work. And so what Yeshua is saying here is that the priests had to work on the Sabbath. So again, he's citing these legal precedents. But this one is the next question there. Let's see, who are we up to? Leah, Could you try the next question? Right, right. Because, you know, you could make the argument that, well, it's Shabbat, well, the rabbi should not be preaching a sermon, because that's work, right? And the worship team should not be playing music, because that's work. And the people who are teaching the children shouldn't be teaching the children, because that's work. You see where that goes? So, again, this is the precedent for saying, well, on Shabbat, it is right to do the things that help people keep the Shabbat. That help people be able to worship. Somebody coming here and, you know, turning on the lights and turning on the heat or whatever, getting the building ready. All those things are needed. People giving people rides. All those things are needed and enable for people to be able to keep Shabbat. So this was very important in our congregation. There was a couple that were had felt the Lord had called them to live as Orthodox Jews. And so they rented an apartment close enough to this building so that they wouldn't have to drive, because Orthodox Jews don't drive on Shabbat, and they would walk. And they were getting more and more into this, and then all of a sudden they got to where they didn't want to serve at all on Shabbat. And that was when we showed them the scripture and said, well, wait a minute, serving in worship is definitely something you're supposed to do on Shabbat. Even if it seems like work, it is supposed to be done on Shabbat.
So okay. Do they agree with it?
Yes, they got the picture.
They still with the Hashmon?
Huh?
They still here?
No, this was a long time ago. They moved away, but they realized that it is okay for me to serve and not to feel like I'm breaking Shabbat because of that. And then Yeshua goes on in this verse 6, and this is another one of his chutzpah statements, so I think we're up to you, Allison.
I tell you that one greater than the temple is here. What does he mean by that statement? I'm better than the temple. He's basically saying that he's greater than the temple, and he's right in front of him.
Yes, so again, a lot of chutzpah. But also, you know, in a kind of a deeper way of looking at that, what was the temple? The temple was the place where something came in. What was it? What came into the temple?
God.
What dwelt in the temple?
God.
The presence of God dwelt in the temple. And actually, you know, when you study it, it was in a visible way. So when Yeshua was saying, I am like the temple, what did he mean?
He's God.
Yeah, God's dwelling in me. If you want to see God, look at me. You don't have to look at the temple anymore. So this actually statement has a lot of meaning to it, and showing again that he was God himself come as a man. And he's also saying here is that there's a tendency to let the Shabbat become like an idol. In other words, keeping the Shabbat becomes so important that you, and it's interesting to say this, that you keep Shabbat so diligently that you miss God,
yeah.
Right? Because you're so worried about doing this and not doing this that you miss the whole point, which is you're supposed to take this time and delight in the Lord, right?
Sometimes in
Christmas time.
Church in the Black tradition, sometimes, not all the time, it's that case where going to church on Sunday and doing the work in the church on Sunday is larger than an actual relationship with God.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Right? And sometimes I would talk to people and watch all the stuff in the church, all the stuff in the building and the stuff that goes on in there.
So we're coming here from 10 to 1 every day, and it's all about doing all this work and meeting all these people and stuff. And wait a minute, why are we coming? Oh, we're supposed to meet with God. Oh, I forgot about that, right? Yeah, and I tell you, amongst pastors, we talk about this all the time, that the work of the ministry can become an idol. You can devote your so much to working and serving, because there's always more to do. And you can devote yourself so much to that that you don't have time for the Lord. And that's actually a downfall of many people who enter the ministry. They get so burned out by that they have to quit. So you can pray for me that I don't do that.
In some churches, it's more like people get so carried away with the tradition, like what you have to do. I know in Ukraine, there's lots of Orthodox churches, and there's the whole procedure, like when you come to the church, you have to do this and this, and you know, sometimes people just forget why they came there.
Yes.
Sometimes we drive by and people just stand there
by the door.
By the entrance, because you have to do this whole thing, like just to enter it.
And they don't know how
to
do it.
Yeah. Like whatever.
Oh, they're just waiting.
Yeah, waiting, and then you have to go inside and kiss the icons and stuff like that, and then kiss the priest's clothes, and it just like gets crazy.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah,
they have no relationship with God because they don't know. They just go and follow those like traditions.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very much true of Judaism too. It's all tradition, but the presence of God is not there when they're gathering, which is really the whole purpose of
the
why we're
thing.
Gathering.
If you will ask them why are they doing this or that, they don't know.
It's tradition.
They don't know.
Yeah.
There's a Christian artist. He called them spare rituals.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of rituals?
Spare rituals. They're just extra stuff to do.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Right.
It's nonsense. You should.
Right. So it's always interesting to me is how we as human beings can mess things up. Take something so simple. Okay, we're supposed to get together and be in the presence of the Lord, and there's so much distraction. Right.
Well, it's interesting, I know, like Orthodoxy, and they like do all those things. Is like the only people that really understand what they're doing are like the priests and the deacons and things like that. But the people in the congregation, they really don't understand. They're just doing it because of the leaders.
Right.
And
this was, you know, one of the big things, and I don't know if the Orthodox Church in the Ukraine is like this, but the Catholic Church here in America, up until a couple of decades ago, did everything in Latin. So nobody even understood, right, those of you who are Catholic, what was being said, except the priest, you know. And in Judaism, you know, you go to a typical synagogue, especially the Reformed or the Conservative synagogues, and they're reciting prayers in Hebrew, but nobody really even knows what the prayers are saying. They're just saying them as quickly as they can to get through them, and nobody knows what they're saying.
Down on Wooden Road and Ground Crop.
Yeah.
They do the land and the Catholic Church there.
They're what?
The service is in Latin.
There's Latin.
I think
Latin.
Even here, and there's and around the corner, there's Ukrainian church. So some of the stuff they do, it's the old Slavic language, which is like. It's hard to understand, like either the Russian people or Ukrainian will understand.
So they don't understand it, really?
Yes, you will learn the language.
I didn't know that.
It's so hard to learn.
Wow.
I guess they don't have the English translation on their slide.
I don't think they have the slide.
Okay, who are we up to? David?
David.
Which one are we using?
Chapter 12, verses 7 and 8.
Next page.
Matthew 12, 7 and 8.
So page 24 in the book.
But if you had known what this means, I desire compassion, not sacrifice, you would not have condemned the innocent. For the Son of Man is the Lord of the Sabbath.
Okay, so that's where he says this another chutzpah thing.
Right.
You know. And also, he says it again, because he said it back in Mark also.
Mm-hmm.
Dave, do you want to take a crack and try to answer the question there?
What does it mean by this statement? I desire compassion, not sacrifice. Means you have compassion and caring for people on Shabbat.
Right. Right, rather than the sacrifice.
Instead of a religious hard attitude.
Right.
Religious spirit attitude. It's compassion and caring for others. And
so remember what provoked this controversy between him and the Pharisees was that they were criticizing his disciples from eating heads of grain as they were walking through the fields.
Right.
And they were hungry, so they were eating. So they're getting on their case because it's Shabbat, because they were working. Rubbing the grain so that you get the kernels out was considered to be work. And what he's saying there is, to me, you know, it's very powerful. I want compassion. In other words, I want you to care about people more than following all the rules.
Well, that's because the rabbinic Judaism comes in. It's all but the rabbis
right.
defining and stating, you know.
And human nature, as we've heard from the Ukrainian Orthodox, from the Catholic, and from Judaism, human nature tends to make us go in the direction of let's make a bunch of rules and keep all the rules, and that's the good thing, rather than either caring about each other or actually getting to know the Lord, being in His presence.
For me, it was interesting that sometimes for people, like it's not sometimes, like it's hard to keep 10 commandments, which is only 10.
Yeah.
And they will make a bunch of
613.
Well, in Judaism, but there's also like in Orthodox.
In the Orthodox,
yeah,
yes,
the
rules. All right, now we get into the whole thing about the healing. And Julia, would you read chapter 12 of Matthew 9 through 11?
And when he had departed thence, he went into their synagogue, and behold, there was a man that had his hand withered. And they asked him, saying, is that lawful to heal on the Sabbath day, that they might accuse him? And he said unto them, what man shall there be among you that shall have one sheep, and if he fall into a pit on the Sabbath, will not lay hold on it and lift it up?
So what's he doing here again? Can you see what he's doing? He's being like that attorney again. He's quoting legal precedents. Okay, and so Julie, you want to try to answer the question?
What work is allowed to rescue or heal?
Rescuing your life.
Life.
And Nate, want to try 12 through 14?
Now a man is far important than a sheep, so it follows that it is permitted to do good on the Sabbath day. Then he said to the man, stretch out your hand. He stretched it out, and his hand was better, as sound as the other one. At this the Pharisees went out and began to plot against him, discussing how to destroy him.
So, the question? Read the question first.
Oh, the question is, why did the Pharisees decide to destroy Yeshua? Well, if you're a man of the world and a man of the theocracy of that nation, then you would think that Jesus was undermining their authority.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, if you're spiritually minded and you believe that Christ is God, the Pharisees are actually undermining God.
Right.
And so, you know, I think that they had to destroy him because he was going to, the people were following him and not
right.
them,
right.
very simply.
Right. But the point I wanted everybody to see here, because we're studying the Shabbat, is the issue that provoked them to say that they wanted to kill him was that he wouldn't keep the Shabbat the way they wanted him to keep it.
And he was healing people.
Right. And he was healing people, right.
It was a 30.
Right. And of course, you know, when he did this, this demonstrated that God was agreeing with him, right? I mean, the man's hand was healed. And they knew that was a miracle.
Right,
this was a crippled man, and his hand was healed. And yet they still, instead of saying, oh, I guess we were wrong, I guess he's right, because God obviously brought a sign to show that he's right. What did they do? They said, we're going to plot to kill him now.
It's pride and arrogance.
Pride and arrogance, and not say you're wrong. But also their position and their authority was being threatened.
How many years before Yeshua was established of the rabbinic law and all that? Does it go back to Babylon or before Babylon? Or?
Well, I think it was always ongoing ever since the law was given by Moses.
Moses all the way
the
up.
Prophets, if you actually read the prophets, they're interpreting the law oftentimes and you know expounding on it.
Oh, yeah.
So it was a 1,000-year process of you know, one way of thinking about the law of Moses is like the Constitution, and then the Talmud, in a sense, is almost like the New York
amendments.
State. Not the amendments, but the common law.
Oh.
The law that, you know, the details of the law. Yeah, so they had come up with this, and they were ready to kill someone who was saying that this was not right. And I remember when I first saw this, I was really shocked. It was about keeping the Sabbath. That was the issue that provoked his so much hatred that they were ready to kill him.
I have two questions. One is, how many times, I found in the Bible more than one instance where he cured on the Sabbath. This is when they started to plot, but he had done it before with a woman.
Yes, he did, with a woman who was hunched over, yeah.
Okay, my second question is, okay, they knew about it, and that enraged them or something, and they knew about that, but did God give the order, where did they ever get the concept that you should be put to death for disobeying?
Oh, that's in the Tanakh. Yeah, there was.
God said.
Yes.
We did talk about this, I think, last time.
Well, in the book of Moses, probably in Exodus, when he first gave the Shabbat, there was a man that went out and was collecting firewood on the Shabbat, and the judgment was that he should be executed.
They stoned him.
Yeah. I think it's probably in one of the parshas that we're reading right now, because we're right in that section, just after the Ten Commandments. Right.
Or is that directly from,
No, that was directly from God. Breaking the Sabbath was a capital offense. But the question was, what does it mean to break the Sabbath? That's where it became this way. And notice in this passage that you just read is that they were looking for a reason to accuse him. So this relates back to him having healed on Shabbat before. Now they were saying, we're gonna bring him to somebody who needs healing in the synagogue, and we're gonna see what he does. And if he heals him, we're gonna get him. Now we have evidence, against him. So this was all part of that mindset of we are the authorities, and we don't want to lose our power. And this man is threatening us, and they probably thought of themselves as doing a great thing for God, because they were very convinced that what they believed was right.
Ignorance.
Yeah, it was ignorance. Right.
But either way, to fulfill the prophecy, it had to go down that way.
Yeah, it's just interesting what the issue was that caused them to do it.
There were many healers at the time. I mean, was that a common thing? I know that in Egypt there was lots of what they called magic, and that's why the magicians were there against Moses. Now,
I don't think so, because the accounts say that people were flocking to him, as if this were something very unusual and very, very unique.
There weren't that many healers. I mean, because some said that he was healing in the name of Beelzebub and so on. Were there other, kind of thinkers out there?
I don't think there was a lot, because, like I say, it was a big deal that he was doing this. There were thousands of people were flocking to him, and crowds.
I'm sure the Egyptians had some witch doctors or something.
Yeah, I don't know whether they were effective, actually.
The magicians, yeah.
All right. Well, let's try this last one here. Who are we up to? Lisa, Leviticus 23, verse 3.
Okay. The work is to be done on 6 days, but the seventh day is a Shabbat of complete rest, a holy convocation. You are not to do any kind of works. It is a Shabbat for Adonai, even in your homes.
The question
is, let's see, what are we to do together on Shabbat? We're to rest, to give honor to him.
Okay. Do you see anything else in the verse that speaking about doing something together?
The holy convocation.
Yes, what's a convocation?
Meeting.
Yeah, so this is one of the most influential verses in the whole Bible. Did everybody see it? Why it is? God said you're to get together once per week on Shabbat and have a holy convocation. In other words, a worship service. So we have our whole cycle of our culture, beginning with the Jewish culture, the Christian culture, and even the Muslim culture, everybody gets together once every 7 days to worship God. You see that? And this is where it came from, right here. So not only are you to rest, it's saying, but you're supposed to get yourself up and get together with your neighbors, that's a holy convocation, and worship God together. So that's why we meet. That's why churches meet. They meet on Sunday, but it's the same principle. And that's why mosques meet. They meet on Friday, but it's the same principle. And I guess I'm not sure what Hindus and Buddhists do. They meet once a week? I can't remember.
They do it in their own homes?
Yeah, but they do have meetings, too. But
They have temples and stuff.
Yeah.
The temples, but it's not on a weekend.
It's not on a weekend. I think it's just...
I think they
holidays.
Do meetings throughout the week.
Yeah, I think it's just the three monotheistic religions that have this. So this has had an incredible effect, you know, on our whole culture. It's the reason why, after 3,500 years, we're still meeting together once a week. And it becomes more apparent to me all the time how important that is to keep the whole thing going. That if we just stopped, I don't think it would pass down from generation to generation. But this coming together, and then people think, well, what should we do? Finally they came up with, after a while, we should read the Bible. And then, okay, we should study the Bible. And then people began to say, well, we should sing to each other. All these things became part of what people do when to fulfill this little command. You should have a holy convocation. And the word holy means it's something, you know, set apart. It's dedicated to the Lord.
Well, I know if you talked about stopping and not doing it, that does pass down, because I'm trying to get my little brother to come too.
Oh.
We stopped going about 10 years ago. We just, it's just too hard to get up. And
as a family?
Yeah.
Oh. And you get out of the habit? And
yeah, you get out of the habit. And
yeah.
It's so hard to start
yeah.
again, especially in the morning.
And actually, this is one of the things interesting for you guys, because in the years that we've worked with people from the former Soviet Union, we've found many people that are like very, you know, they get interested in studying the Bible, but to try to get them to come every week seemed to be like pulling teeth.
Yeah.
And finally we figured out, well, it's just not in their culture. But in American culture, even in the secular Jewish community, everybody has this, well, my parents always did that. They went, you know, once a week. And in the Christian community, once a week you get together. It's just part of the culture.
It also depends from former Soviet Union, most of the people were communists. And for me, I was born in the Christian family, so for me it was
natural.
I had to go. Yeah, because if I didn't go, I didn't feel right. And
yeah.
I can understand those people if you talk about the older ones, because they didn't use it. But
yeah.
The interesting thing in Ukraine back then, and even like right now, it's getting more like in the US, but Saturday, Sunday, most of the stuff, like places are closed. And this is like where you can just relax, the stores and everything. But now it's getting more like people are working Saturday and Sunday, so it's changing. But
yeah, the other reason that I understood from some of the Russian people was that they were afraid to go places where they would meet together because they were being spied on all
yeah.
the time by the
yeah.
KGB. So that's another factor that gets in there.
My house, this is like where, in my house, we had the people who meet up and pray. So I wasn't there, but my mom told me that the KGB was there all the time and writing the last names, and they were going, fire people from their work because they're meeting, they worship God. And every time in our house, we will have like, people will come and search for Bibles. And like once they found the Bible, so they put my grandfather in jail. And that
would
happen all the time.
We don't know how good we have it here.
I just was reading what this is happening in Muslim countries right now.
Yes.
Like that's, and it's not just losing job, it's losing your life. They
you
they kill
for
kill
it.
You for it. Yeah.
I hope I'm not way taking you out of here. Who was appointed to kill the people that broke the Sabbath? Because that's a sin in itself.
The method of execution in the scriptures was that the whole community had to stone people to death. So everybody had to participate in it.
So everybody broke Sabbath.
Well, they didn't do it on the Sabbath. They didn't execute someone on a Sabbath.
They did it the next day. Women did.
They would hold them. Yeah, yeah. But if you read in the Law of Moses, the method of execution was very interesting because everybody had to participate in it. So that would be pretty scary, you know, that you wouldn't want to. Yeah, yeah. And stoning, I mean, that's very
brutal
way of killing someone. Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's what they wanted to do with a woman caught in adultery.
Right.
Did they ever find out what Yeshua scribbled in the sand? Speculation on that?
I've studied it. I think he was writing the Ten Commandments.
Mm-hmm.
And
Bruce and Jeremiah.
Yeah.
Shall not
well, shall not commit adultery was the main one, right? Right. right? But I think that was convicting him. So we should stop because we've been going for over an hour.
Jeremiah 17, verse 13
says,
all who forsake you, put to shame, those who turn away from you, from you written in the dust of the earth, those who turn away from God.
Ah, that's interesting. Uh-huh.
Jeremiah chapter 17, verse 13.
Yeah, that's a good reference. Jeremiah 17:13. Okay, I'm going to have to dig into that. Okay, we're going to stop. And great discussion.
Yeah.
Give yourselves a hand.